Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball. Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
Give me some hurricane, baby.
Oh, you want the caner?
Yes.
You want a little taste of the caner? There we go. It's a little late.
It's the only way.
There we go.
Attaboy. I'm going to be giving Hurricane Gale a phone call in the next 24 hours.
Oh, she's listening right now, so just go ahead and lock it in. Gale, up in an hour, Uncle Jim calls you. Spoiler alert, he wants
Leave
a favor.
Leave my girl alone, Jimmy. Leave her alone. That's only for me.
It's not a social call. So any
I know.
Of the lead-in of the how you been and how you doing,
God,
it's all
about the fun we had at the 95.7 The Game party down in San Jose. That was awesome, man. Gale, we got to do that more often.
Up in an hour, Jim doesn't cut to the chase, Gale. So you can go ahead and just see right through all of that BS. Uncle Jim, he wants a favor. Up in 5 minutes, David Griffin, former GM. He'll join us here at 9:10. Alex Pavlovich at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Giants as we creep ever closer, Jim, to the opening day. Major League Baseball, we're, 72 hours away from the start of another campaign?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of going to an opening day. I like it. I don't like the fact that the Giants open with Tampa Bay on the 5th of April, but I like the fact that the A's are going with an afternoon start. Remember how they used to go Monday night, opening night, head-to-head with the Final Four of the Finals game, the way the calendar always laid out?
It was the best. It was the absolute best.
It was the worst scheduling ever.
I can't tell you how many nights I went out there to see Dave Stewart, opening night starter, every single year. D. Stu would have the ball.
And Stu and I, we're tight. I love my boy Stu.
Not anymore. You just admitted that you...
I like my guy Stu.
So
but
come on. I would sit out in the old bleachers at the old Coliseum back when it was a real baseball park.
You're talking about
you listen to
era.
The Final Four in your Walkman with the foam headband. Anna, you remember?
Yeah,
I
remember.
With the aluminum headband into the little foams. You had to manually tune it with your thumb because you couldn't afford the digital tuner. And you listened to the second half of the national championship game. The fireworks would go. And you'd watch A's baseball. Mm-hmm. It was just that simple. There's nothing more Bay Area than that, Jim.
I may be going to the afternoon tilt that they have against Mike Trout and the Angels on Thursday afternoon because they're doing it properly, even though they've already started their season in Japan.
Right. Were those home games in Japan or were those technically road games?
I think they were home games.
Those were home dates?
Yeah.
Wow. They got the Raider treatment.
I think they got the Raider treatment.
I didn't get that in my season ticket package.
No. No, yeah, I don't know if that one was available.
It was free air travel to Japan and everything.
Is that what was in there? Yeah, I didn't get that.
David Griffin joining us here in just a couple of minutes, the former GM for the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll get his thoughts on the Golden State Warriors and how to keep a team sharp here during the dog days of the NBA season, which basically is February and March as you creep toward the playoffs. You know you're already in the playoffs, yet you have to play out the schedule. Interesting weekend for the Golden State Warriors, guys, as they come out and get absolutely motorboated by Dallas, and then they bounce back with a nice victory against the Detroit Pistons. Kevin Durant, 9 of 25 on Saturday. He was a minus 26, and then he comes out against Detroit yesterday and only shoots the ball 6 times, 5 of 6 from the floor, and a minus 7. Kevin Durant talked about how he didn't have to force it yesterday against Detroit.
Look, we got a lot of scoring out there on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, how many assists we had? 31, you know. So that's the formula for us. And you know, when I get the ball in the post, we usually have a lot of movement on the side. Or if I get in the pick and roll, then, you know, I see somebody open, I got to pass them the ball. So I didn't want to force shots tonight. I mean, if some of the shots I would have took tonight would have been forced, then last game I forced a bunch. So trying to help us get back in the game. So, you know, I just try to play a different game tonight. Is that a problem, Marcus? Anybody else? Oh, all right, bet.
He's talking DeMarcus Thompson, wondering if that's a problem. Jim, do you have a problem with what Kevin Durant is saying?
First, I love when he run it at the media, because as everyone knows, I'm no fan of the media. So good job running it at the media. But I wish someone in the media would have said, yeah, I have a problem with it, because would you take six shots in a conference final game against Houston? Are the Warriors better with you taking six shots? Or is this something that you were trying to say? Is this a message you were trying to send to people? Or were you just trying to do something different?
I think that you're reading into it a little too deep, Jim. I think that when you sit there and say, well, what are you trying to send a message? Send a message, but I don't want to shoot. No. The guy's like, look, we were winning. I didn't need to take over the game. I get it. I understand he can go out and score 30, okay? I understand he can be James Harden if he wants. I understand. He's better when he's shooting more than that. That's absolutely right. But I just think this was a situation last night that they were controlling the game. He didn't need to be that forceful.
Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Jim Cozumore in for Joe Fortenbaugh. It's our pleasure to be joined by David Griffin, former general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Thanks for joining us. How you doing today, David?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
What do you think about this Golden State Warriors situation? We just were talking about Kevin Durant, 25 shots one night, six shots the next. Are you seeing that Kevin Durant is maybe having a difficult time being consistently involved in what they're trying to do offensively?
Well, I think part of that's because the Warriors in general are having a difficult time integrating all of the pieces. I think what made the Boogie Cousins acquisition interesting by way of example was that it was more of what they already had. It was a really skilled offensive player who could put the ball in the basket with regularity, could make some plays for other people, but isn't a defender. In a lot of ways, they didn't need any more ball dominance, and so I think that sort of exacerbated the situation for Kevin. Now, obviously, Cuz didn't play last night, but I think that put everything in a little bit of a strange place relative to fit, and I think they're just kind of finding their way through a little bit.
Hey, David, you built some teams that made long playoff runs, and so with about 10 games remaining in a schedule, what would you do with your coaching staff to prepare everyone for what the playoffs are about to become? And I think the more specific version of that question is, did you have someone outside the organization who you asked to scout your teams to tell you what the outside sees you guys are doing? Because sometimes you can be too close to a situation. So how did you guys prepare for what you would assume to be a long playoff run?
Yeah, we actually did have people scout our teams. That was done more on the coaching side. Ty Lue and LD, Larry Drew, reached out to their friends in the field, and they were doing that for us for probably the last month of the season. And then we were doing advanced scout work on teams that we might play in the first round for probably 3 weeks before the playoffs started. I think one of the really underappreciated aspects of heading into the playoffs is having a full grasp of the teams you're going to play in the first round as early as possible. Certainly, Golden State knows how to do this. All they do is make it to the finals, and all they do is win. So they know how to do this, and I assure you that Steve Kerr and Bob Myers have been doing that.
Sure, you're right, and this team does know how to win. But sometimes they struggle like they're doing now at times, just the inconsistency. You've had a guy that was the main point, the focal point of your team in Cleveland when you were there. But what is the biggest thing? How can they be a disconnect? How do you have a team, turn or flip that switch when the playoffs is Warrior fans kind of spoiled in the sense that they see a team kind of teetering, like, what's wrong with this? Or do you think this team can turn it on, especially when the playoff gets here?
So, yes, first of all, Warriors fans are incredibly spoiled. To be on the run that Warriors fans have been on, to be on the run that Cavs fans got to go on, it's a rare and special thing, and you need to be in the moment as often as you can as a fan, which is hard because you get to the point where you're just as jaded and as bored as the players are with the regular season. And that's one of the things that I think, given the Warriors situation, as many times as they've played into the finals, as short as the turnaround is now from finals to the start of the next season, it's natural they would be bored. It's natural they would be in that space where they're just trying to make it to the playoffs. And they are a team that I think will be able to flip the switch because they've done it before. They know what it looks like. They know what it feels like on the defensive side of the ball. What concerns me for them is until this season, I never felt like they had upheaval in terms of chemistry. I never felt like there was a disconnect on a human level in that locker room. Obviously, Draymond was always volatile, but he was sort of the junkyard dog that those guys needed. He was perfect for them. But I feel like now they've just got a lot more volatility. So while they will be able to flip the switch, when they face adversity in the playoffs for the first time, will they have comfort with whose turn it is to take over, and when do they ask whom, I suppose, to take over?
Is it really a question then of shot selection? Because it seems to me that when Kevin Durant is at his best, the other two scorers, primarily Clay and Steph, are willing to give up the ball and let him get into isolation. But when he starts to settle for the early three, is that when you see that the offense starts to break down and become disjointed?
Yeah, and I think that's been the biggest problem in terms of their chemistry and the fit of all of their pieces this year has been they've been reluctant to just buy into the system and take the best shot available. And I think past iterations of the Warriors were far more willing to do that. So when they did decide to flip the switch and care, it came much more naturally to them to get the most efficient shot. I don't see them playing like that now. Even when they do show up and decide that they want to play and play hard defensively, the offense isn't nearly as seamless as it once was. And to your point, yes, it's about taking what is given to you and being comfortable. If you have to be ancillary on a given night, be ancillary. And I see people struggle with that there.
Hey, David, when you were building teams, did you have the Warriors in mind? And what are the things you would want to have if you were going to take on the Warriors? For instance, Daryl Morey famously said, "I go to bed thinking about the Warriors, I wake up thinking about the Warriors," and whatever his version of beating the Warriors is. Did you have a vision in mind that you felt you needed to put together if you were going to be able to compete toe-to-toe with the Warriors?
Well, the first year we put our group together with LeBron, Kevin, and Kyrie, the Warriors weren't the Warriors yet. So we did not. That first team was put together to be the best fit we could possibly put together around two ball dominant play creators. And we felt like it was a really good nucleus to build to, but that was really designed on what we wanted our team to look and play like. The following years thereafter, we were very cognizant of the Warriors and what level of versatility we would need defensively, but we didn't build the team for that reason. We tried to build a team that was as Swiss Army knife-like as possible, so that no matter what we faced in the playoffs, no matter what type of team we faced, we'd be able to have a matchup that was suitable for us. And so the Warriors were certainly part of that, our need for wing versatility. But we were looking at it more across the breadth of what could we potentially face.
Question for you. Last year, there's a lot of Rocket fans that believe if a certain individual, Chris Paul, didn't get hurt, that they probably, there was a chance that they beat the Warriors. Everyone's thinking if that happens. Does Cavs fans feel the same way in year one when this first matchup started, when the Warriors and the Cavs started this crash collision course for 3-4 years after that, especially when Kyrie and Love injured?
Yeah, I think our fans did. I know I felt like if we would have had our full team, we would have stood a much better chance of defeating that Warriors team. As it was, if Dellavedova doesn't go in the hospital in the middle of the series, we felt like we were in a pretty good position, up 2-1, and Deli goes into the hospital. That was scary. But I look at it now, relative to this year's playoffs, the reason it matters is Houston knows in their own heart they can beat the Warriors, and they didn't know that before last year. So whether they're right or wrong, whether or not they would have won despite the injury or not, they feel to the core of themselves, they have the swag that they can beat you, and that's enormous. And I think the Warriors have, for the first time, a recognition that somebody else can beat them in the Western Conference, and that's unique as well. So if they do match up at any point in the Western Conference playoffs, it'll be a tremendous series because of that, because both teams sort of have that feeling of mutually assured destruction.
It's interesting to see what will happen if the Rockets and Warriors meet again, if it's in the Western Conference Finals before or not at all. David Griffin, former Cavs general manager, thank you for joining us.
And, can I sneak one real quick one in?
Hopefully we'll touch base again before the playoffs.
Hold on, David. Hold on.
David?
Is he still there?
Yes, he's still there, Jim.
I'm here.
You blocked my send-off.
Hold on. We're going to give you the send-off. Are you enjoying drinking too much good red wine, or are you itching to get back as a GM?
Well, definitely enjoying the red wine.
Yes.
My wife's happy place in the world was Sonoma, Napa, so we definitely made a point of spending as much time there as we could. But there's going to be a time where there's a right fit for me to go back, and if the right opportunity would present itself, I would be intrigued by it. But I'm not anxious to go back relative to a bad situation.
Okay. Just want to know. Go ahead, Dan.
No. Jim, you
David,
go ahead.
You're welcome here all the time. Especially if you can give us some good tips on red wine, buddy. That's what I like.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, pal. We'll see you. All right.
Thank you.
I apologize,
David,
Dan,
for joining us.
I apologize.
If I may quote my older brother, Douglas.
Wow.
Apology not, in fact, accepted.
Yeah, because he wasn't really apologizing. He was going in there no matter what you said. Can I ask the question? I mean, you were going to ask that question anyway.
David, are you enjoying drinking that good vodka?
Right. Was that
needed? Are you enjoying any whiskey in your time off?
He spent a lot of time in Napa. You know, two of the most prominent GMs in the NBA who are out of work are both in Northern California. Sam Hinkie's teaching classes at Stanford, and you've got David Griffin up here in Napa.
Nice. So. That really brought it home, Jim. I appreciate that. That felt great.
Hey, feels like Joe's back in the room.
Well, if Joe were here, you wouldn't have dared to step in and block the
send-off. I'm a little different than you two. No. You two come in here with, you know. You guys got your dipe sign.
Hit the text line 9595. Would Coach have said that if Joe was here?
Chilt Nautobot text line 95795. Your resemblance to Yertle the Turtle is remarkable when it comes to this. It's easy to run roughshod over your old friend who may or may not have stabbed you in the back some 5 years ago. It's easy to do that to me, but a Joe Fortenbaugh? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you have the gravitas, as we like to say.
He's still here.
To try to dunk on Joe. Dunking on Joe is like trying to get at Taco Fall. He's the Taco Fall of 95-7 the game.
I'm Zion with my finish on Taco on that one.
Yeah, with your offensive foul before the finish on Taco Fall.
And then after the poor free throw, the push off on the back by Duke. Did Duke get every call that mattered in that game or not?
In fact, they didn't, as we touch base quickly on college basketball.
We don't have to, but...
Taco Fall and company got the benefit of a video replay where the ball didn't hit the rim. They got the offensive rebound, the shot clock. It did reset, and they were unable to get the call their way. So Duke didn't get that call,
Gene
Jim.
Steratore, there was not conclusive evidence on that visual piece. That's why they could not overturn it. So they didn't get the benefit of anything. They just got facts. The benefit came for Duke in that game. Who was rooting for Duke? Nobody on the planet who didn't have an attachment to Duke. Everyone was rooting for the Knights.
That's categorically incorrect. I was rooting for Duke, and I have no connection to Duke. So
I'm a longtime UCF Knights fan. I'm a Moores
of
Day
course.
And the Knights fan.
I too was
Wait
rooting
till
for
Otis,
Duke.
Otis Day, not Moores Day. Moores Day in the time. Day. Otis Day in the Knights.
Wait till Otis sees us. He loves us. Do you mind if we dance with your dates, etc.? Yes. Lo, getting back on topic here is
thank you,
Jim tried to hijack the segment there with his tomfoolery. What David Griffin was saying about this Warrior team and offensively kind of being in a confused spot, is this what you've been saying all along as far as how they go about getting their points and how important that is?
Yeah, I have been, but I think the other fascinating thing was that I took it away from that conversation with the former GM, Dibs and Coes, was the way that he talked about Houston. We haven't had anyone come in and talk about Houston in the way in which he laid it out to give you a reason for some concerns. I think, Coes, that if you listen to what he was saying, here's a team that believes that they can bend. There's a good book in this book that I like to read. It says, well, faith is a substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. See, they have faith and they have hope that they can beat the Warriors because they didn't have, you know, Chris Paul last year at the end of that game, at the end of that game when he got injured. So game seven, he was no longer with the team. So he's talking about the hope that they have, even though it may not come to fruition. If he said that makes for a hell of a matchup, if you listen to him, the way that he laid it out, it made sense.
It makes some sense. I think you can say that. And what you say about faith is true, but it works on both sides. And if you're the Warriors, you don't need to have the hope because you've gone out and done it. So you've had your faith confirmed from that standpoint. So if you're the Warriors, as much as Houston can rightly think, well, we took 3 of the 7 last year in the playoffs, and we've taken 3 of the 4 this year in the regular season. So we've been toe-to-toe. We've been dead even with this team over the past, I guess that'd be 11 meetings. The Rockets are thinking, hey, we've won 6 of these 11.
Yeah.
Granted, the Warriors won the most important 4, and then they won the one this year. You at least can be buoyed by the fact that you've got faith as a Warrior fan, knowing that they've done it before. 95-7 the game, and Clover Sonoma have teamed up once again. And this time we are celebrating Clover's 50th anniversary by giving you a chance to win free milk for a year. For your chance to be one of 50 qualifiers, visit the contest page at 957thegame.com.
Milk was a bad choice.
See, you don't play milk as a bad choice when you're promoting giving away milk for the year,
yes.
James.
Come on, leche, everybody.
James, is this your first time following up a promotion? Now, if you would have edited it to milk was a good choice, then it works. But when you say milk is a bad choice, what are the good people at Clover Sonoma going to do?
Please explain.
They're going to demand a make good. Are you going to be here for the make good, James?
You can turn. That's where you pose it. Turn your mic.
No, it was a rhetorical question because no, he's not.
Okay,
this may in fact be his last time with us here.
Wow,
on Jolo and Dibs.
Wow. Joe is in the building.
Yeah, as I flex a little muscle here.
Now that was a little.
At 9:25.
Yes, yeah. That was a little really Joey-esque right there.
James, enjoy Jim Cosmore on the weekend.
James,
you're bullying.
Up next, San Francisco Giants.
James and Coz are going to be out of here.
Tease blocker.
I know. Only my first one though.
Giants insider for NBC Sports Bay Area, Alex Pavlovich, joins us next. That's brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. But first, what's happening on 95.7 The Game, Anna?
There's lots going on right now, Dibs. After a rough loss Saturday night to the Mavericks, the Warriors bounce back with a win over the Pistons to get win number 5-0 and retake the one seed. Golden State has won at least 50 games for 6 straight seasons. Dubs hit the road next for Memphis. They face the Grizzlies on Wednesday, and you can listen to the action right here on 95.7 The Game. More rest and more beer? Was that the key to Andrew Bogut's rejuvenation? Well, apparently that's what Ethan Strauss from The Athletic found out. He'll join Damon Bruce today at 6:10. And in 1 week, we are bringing back the Golden Ticket Contest. One person will get a pair of tickets to every home playoff game courtesy of the Warriors. Stay locked on 95.7 The Game and check out the 957thegame.com website to see how you can win. The A's won the Bay Bridge Series opener 5-0 over the Giants. Series shifts to Oracle Park. Giants insider Alex Pavlovich will join the show next. Brought to you by Green Sports Bar. I'm Anna Kagadaike. He's on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game. You know you make me wanna
kick my heels up and throw my hands up. Joe Lo and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Come on now.
Listen to James listening to the show and then bumping with references from the show.
James, it's a nice comeback. I'd like to apologize for trying to end your radio career with one 10-second tirade. It's a nice bounce-back performance. Much like the Warriors who laid an egg on Saturday, you did the same with your milk as a bad choice on the heels of the great Clover promotion, but you came back, and you had a nice game against Detroit here with the rejoin music.
I agree. I'm a big fan. And then we had off the text line, the 415 gives me Gladys Knight in the pips. There's a lot of Knight references when it comes to music. Morris Day. I had Morris Day in the Knights, but no, it's Morris Day in the Time. That's day, not night.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's all about day and night, Jim.
I met Morris Day. I'm a huge Time fan. I'm a huge Morris Day fan. Got a picture with him. I'm a huge fan.
Oh. Are you a huge baseball fan, Jim?
Because I like me some baseball. Why? Is it going on?
I believe we've got a little thing called the Bay Bridge Series. Are you locked in? Are you dialed in? Because we got game 2 tonight at Oracle Park. Giants and A's. The A's, of course, winning the opener 5-0. Game tonight, game tomorrow. Does it feel like this Bay Bridge series just kind of crept up on us?
Yeah, did you see time of game yesterday?
No.
It was like 2 hours and 5 minutes or something like that.
Really?
It was some crazy quick start and finish to that thing. And gosh, if you could play games quicker, that'd be something. I think that's going to be indicative of what you see the Giants do this season, though. You get shut out in the Bay Bridge. I'm not expecting them to be a 5-run-per-game team.
Yes, and when you only muster a small handful of hits, the game tends to go pretty fast. In fact, 7 hits in all from both sides. For more on the Bay Bridge series, we bring in our next guest. He of NBC Sports Bay Area is a great San Francisco Giants insider, Alex Pavlovich, joining Dibs, Coz, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Alex, how are you enjoying the Bay Bridge series so far? Are you getting a lot of sleep?
It was 2 hours, like you said. So yeah. That was I will take that every single game for the next 6 months.
That's so true. I'm telling you, a quick game would do wonders for attendance and eyeballs. It would. But in all seriousness, though, Alex, is it going to be kind of like that for the Giants this year? Is it going to be one of those years where we're hanging around hoping that if they win, it's going to be a 3-2-2-1 game?
Yeah, I think in general, that's what you're looking at. I heard what you guys were talking about a little bit. I think one thing that happened with this series, and I think you see it at the end of spring training too, is guys are kind of over it. They're ready for the season to start. I know a lot of guys yesterday had just gone back into town and want to get their home set up, want to get their car set up. So I think we saw a lot of first pitch swinging yesterday from both sides, and that was why it moved so quickly. But yeah, this is a team that is built around pitching. They should have a pretty good rotation. I think they have a pretty good bullpen, certainly a deep bullpen, and the lineup is probably worse than it was last year at this Ooh. Point, which is an issue. So I think, yeah, if they're going to compete, it is going to be 3-2, 4-1, things like that.
It's going to have to be a solid defense, solid pitching. Pablo Sandoval, one of the three hits yesterday. Mac Williamson, the hit. Brandon Crawford with a lone hit. Is Pablo, though, in some danger from a roster standpoint? Break it down on where he sits as far as how this roster shakeup might happen.
Yeah, he's in real danger. I think you look at they're probably going to carry 13 pitchers to start the year, and so that means four bench spots. Eric Kratz is one of them. Solarte is one of them. So you're not looking at a whole lot of wiggle room there, and then you probably want to carry a fourth outfielder, I think, that teams generally do and want to somebody who can really play out there and somebody who can back up Steven Duggar in center field. So that really leaves one spot for Sandoval and Alan Hansen and all these guys that have come through the last week or so. And I just think it's going to be tough for Pablo just because he does duplicate a lot of what they have on the roster already. And I know his right-handed swings have been much better, and certainly that is key, but he is playing behind the guy who's a right-handed hitting third baseman and plays just about every day. So it is hard right now, I think, as they put this roster together. But I also don't think that's somebody they necessarily want to lose and somebody that I think that's somebody they want in the clubhouse and in the organization. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see something creative over the next 4 days. And I think even with, you know, as much as they've talked about 13 pitchers and as much as we've tried to do the math, I mean, I would not be surprised if they do something weird with the rotation or the bullpen and something that allows them to keep some of these guys through Thursday, and then, you know, maybe they reevaluate on Sunday or Monday.
Alex, one of the fan favorites we know is Buster Posey. How is he coming along? How does he look? And is this a guy that you think is going to make it back really quick here?
Yeah, I mean, he'll be there on Thursday. He is ready to go. The one thing to me that stands out is just how much talk there has been about the catching situation, and I think a lot of that is trying to certainly have a good backup, but it also seems like they're very aware that Buster, you know, may not be able to play nine innings on Thursday and Friday and Saturday right out of the gate. So I know as far as having a third catcher, one thing Bruce Bochy said yesterday was that it allows you to maybe take Buster out in the middle of a game and not have to worry too much. And they have mentioned how Pablo can be an emergency catcher. Connor Joe has been a catcher in the past. So it does seem like there's some concern right now, not necessarily about Buster's health, but about his ability early in the year to play nine innings every night. And I think that's something they're going to keep a close eye on. But for the most part, it's been smooth sailing for him. I mean, there was a decent chance he wasn't even going to be ready at this point. So the fact that he is going to be out there on Thursday is a victory in and of itself. And I think, you know, they're confident that he's going to have more power this year. We didn't really see that in the spring, but maybe that is something that as the weather heats up here and he gets used to feeling the way he did 2 or 3 years ago, that power comes back.
Who do you look at then from a catching depth standpoint? Is it Aramis Garcia first and then maybe Eric Kratz? And how does this eventually affect Brandon Belt if Buster Posey needs to move to first base? Does Belt see any time in the outfield, or are those days he just sits?
Well, Bochy said yesterday that Kratz is going to be his backup for now. So I think it's going to be Kratz on Thursday. It might be Kratz and Garcia just because, I mean, credit to Aramis. He's done a great job of retooling his swing a little bit and really tapping into more of that natural power. And you know, I think they look at this roster and say, who can come off the bench in the seventh inning for us and hit a two-run homer? And he's as good a bet as just about anybody right now. So I think he is still in that mix. And that's certainly a position with Steven Vogt also going to AAA where it's something I know a lot of people have asked about the Nick Hundley thing. If they would have brought Hundley back, you have Buster and Hundley the whole year. I think we're going to see at least three different guys back up Posey this year and maybe more at some point. In terms of how everything else shakes out, yeah, you bring up something interesting. And I know Belt has not really done work in the outfield this spring, and it doesn't seem like it's been an emphasis. But you look at the roster, and it's hard not to see how you put his bat in left field at some point, just because if you are going to have Buster at first, or maybe Garcia on the roster where Garcia can play first, I mean, at some point you're going to need to keep Belt in the lineup. He's probably their best hitter right now. So that is something we haven't seen a lot of this spring, but I would not be surprised if at some point over the next week, it's something we're talking about.
Alex, I want to stay on Belt because it seems like it's year 12 of the Is This Brandon Belt's Breakout Year? I feels that way from just an observer. And I know in the last couple of years, he's had a hole in his swing, but that hole was a straight fastball down the middle of the plate. Is he showing any growth as a hitter? And why should we believe he's now going to be the hitter that Brian Sabian had always thought he was going to be?
Yeah, you know, a buddy texted me last night and said he was in his fantasy draft, and he said, do you have any advice? And I'm like, I think I told you this last year, too, but I could see Belt hitting 30 this year.
Nice.
Every spring. Because he is so talented and has such a good eye, and really, I mean, the power is there. And I just think for him, it's a matter of staying healthy, and it's a matter of, I mean, whether it's luck or the baseball gods or whatever, I mean, just he has had some really strange things happen to him. I mean, last year he was on pace for 30 home runs, was hitting about 300, and then his appendix flares up in the middle of a game and just never recovered from that. And I think the issue he's had, he does at times have a timing issue with his swing, and certainly a big guy and a lot going on there. And when he misses 2 weeks or misses 3 weeks, when he gets concussed or has something happen with his knee, we've just seen it over and over again. He has a really hard time finding that timing. But right now, I mean, he is swinging as well as anybody. And, you know, I fully expect him again to get off to a good start. Just the key for him is being out there for 150 games. If he does that, I think he's going to put up monster numbers and probably be this team's best hitter and might win a gold glove. But it's just been something that you say every year, if he can do this, and something happens every single year that keeps him off the field for 2 months.
You can't help but hope for the kid. I remember watching him with the San Jose Giants, Alex, when he hit 380 in the first half and was immediately promoted, and you thought, this guy could be Babe Ruth in the making, yet due to health reasons, he's never been able to hang in there and play enough. Alex, thanks for joining us. Enjoy opening day, just a few days away, and we look forward to catching up with you really soon.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Alex Pavlovich, NBC Sports Bay Area, your Giants insider. Get all your Giants preseason stuff. You got two more preseason games, Jim, exhibition games, and then the season starts for real on Thursday.
How ironic will it be that this will be Brandon Belt's breakout season, and he could win a gold glove, and he could hit 30, and yet at the trade deadline, he's going to be one of the biggest targets because the Giants understand where they are as an organization. So you've been waiting all these years for Belt to have the breakout. He'll have it in the year. You hope he has it in the year that he might be the most targeted guy to deal to try to restock your system.
It'll be interesting to see at the deadline if the Giants are 10 or 15 games below 500, which most projections see them being that kind of ball club. What do you do then if you're the Giants, if you're Farhan Zaidi and your first time at the deadline with the Giants? Do you look to move Bumgarner? Is he untouchable? Do you look to move Brandon Belt and other pieces? It'll be fascinating to see just where this team is. Lo, we're just 3 days away from opening day. It snuck up on us, it seems like, not only here at the station, but here in the market. How do you gauge the excitement for opening day here for Major League Baseball, just being 3 days away?
I think that every fan is excited. Even though their team doesn't have the superstars that they would like that this team to have collected, it's something about any sport, no matter what, when it's opening day, opening football, whether it's basketball, doesn't matter. That first day, it's excitement. Kids are still playing hooky. they take days off from school.
Why? I hope so. That was an awesome time. I've done that before. That was an awesome time.
It's something about the first pitch, and they still have – that day is always owned by baseball. Opening day, take me down to the ballpark. I mean, love the song.
It's ballpark.
You know?
Good game.
You know, take me down to the ball game. And you watch it. You love baseball for those reasons. But I think right now A's fans – and Giants fans, they're both excited about the start of the season. No, they're not excited maybe where the end of the season, what it may look like. But all right now, definitely excited.
It's interesting you say that because I am thinking of going to the A's opener. And Thursday, it's an afternoon
matinee
start. Yeah,
against
exactly.
The Angels.
Yeah, and
why don't you sing the song, Cozy, how you like?
Because I'm not – take me out to the ballpark, right?
That's ballpark.
Buy me some – sushi and what else do they have in that song?
Raisins.
And raisins, yeah, and some raisins.
Ugh. Nut butter.
Anyway.
And nut so butter.
But the whole reason that you bring up playing hooky, whether it's from work, whether it's from school.
Right.
Hey, mom and dad,
yeah,
you should. It's a free pass for you to have your kid not go to school that day and take them to the ball game.
Together. Nice family outing. Absolutely.
Exactly. Whether you're driving to, you know what, and surprise the kid.
Yeah.
Your son or daughter. Surprise them. Have them get up in the morning, think they're going, and they're not. You don't take them to school. Or let them go to school and take them on a little bit early, and you guys drive over to Bart and take Bart in. I'm just telling you, that's one of the great memories. So I absolutely agree,
good.
And I hope parents get the free pass to do that for their kids, because missing one day of school when you're in fifth grade isn't going to be on your permanent record and prevent you from going to Stanford. Okay, I'm just letting you in on that.
It is spring break in Oakland, too, for the Oakland public school kids, so it's a free pass for my kids. Go ahead and heading out to the ball game if you want to catch
it. Maybe take them down there to the ball game, you know, ballpark, maybe dibs.
Giants 105 at San Diego, low as they get their season started.
I'd like
on
to go to
Thursday
that one.
As well.
Yeah, I'd like to go to San Diego.
You
want to
catch a flight? I'll go down there with you after that one.
It all starts at 10 o'clock Thursday morning with the Mets at the Nationals. Orioles are at the Yankees. That'll be the national TV game. And we get a full slate of action throughout the day as Major League Baseball gets underway. Lo, when you look at this Giants team, as the roster is constructed, you heard Alex Pavlovich talk about the three-hit effort against Oakland in the first game of the Bay Bridge series and what could be a tough year offensively. Where do you set the bar as far as expectation for this Giants team? Is it 81 wins? Is that really the top end? Or can you see this team maybe making a push in the mid-80s, the upper 80s, and maybe even threatening a wild card spot?
Dibs, I'm not going to... If I came out and said that, I would be remiss and I'd be a homer if I just said, hey, this team's going to win 80, 85 and push and make a wild card push. And I know the skipper, he's optimistic about it. We had him on the show. Shout out, Boach. And the skipper, he comes on and talks about, hey, there's some guys, some excitement. But you just don't have enough in the cupboards. The cupboards are bare. And, you know, you want to look, see what's going to happen with Belt and Posey and see if these guys can, you know, rekindle that magic. You know what, Madison, I'll say it, he's a horse. You know, you want to see that guy pitch, you want to see Gloria and all those guys are going to be able to do, but do they have it? Do they have enough? Do they have enough to make this a competitive season? I'll tell you what, it's going to be determined how they get off. A fast horse runs fast, but he don't run long. But I'll tell you what, Giants fans would love to start fast and get off to a good start just to keep them in it. A
couple interesting things from Alex, Jim, as we get ready to turn the keys over to Steiny and Guru. The idea of Pablo Sandoval not making the opening day roster, yet somehow clearing waivers and being added later. How odd would it be to not have Pablo after he's come back in his second stint and pointed himself pretty well?
You know what? That is one of the amazing comeback stories, because when he left there, he torched the bridge,
didn't he?
He torched the bridge. He dared to go after the biggest of big names, and that means Bruce Bochy. And there was no way he would ever be able to come back here. And I often thought, even though he had greatness here, if the Red Sox ever had to come back here and play the Giants at what was then AT&T, I would wonder how the fans would take it, because he dared to leave and he dared to do it in an ugly fashion. So for him to come back, be welcomed, be a good citizen, be able to play multiple positions, it's an interesting story.
What does that tell you about the skipper, though? Where this is a guy who talked about all those stuff. This goes to tell you, skipper takes the higher road. What you have, you had a great skipper. I know this is going to be his last year, but here's a guy that opening back with open arms, brought him in. Hell, even let him pitch a couple innings. You see how the Bochy and how the skipper performs and how he operates. I just hope that, you know, don't know if he's going to necessarily make this ball squad, this ball team, but it's going to be interesting just to see how it all pans out.
Ultimately, this team will go or stop based on their pitching and their defense, but questions about the outfield, Jim, and you look at a guy like Connor Joe, who Giants fans are going to have to get to know, a fourth outfielder for this team, and somebody who's going to have to play a pretty big role, especially when you look at Steven Duggar, unproven, Mac Williamson, also unproven. The outfield, the biggest question mark by far for this team.
At the team luncheon today, when they have the guys walk in, I think most of the people at the luncheon are going to look up there and say, hey, who are those four guys? Because they're not going to know what the outfield looks like, all right? This ain't Angel Pagan and Hunter Pence and company coming out there. This is going to be a whole group that nobody knows who they are nor what they can do. And
but is it a step up when you – even Hunter Pence was he was a legend. Great guy. Great player.
Excellent point.
Is it a step up? Hunter Pence, you look at him at the tail end of his career. Was he breaking down? Do you think this is a step up, Kozer?
I would say it's a step up in that they've decided to take a road, and they know the road that they're going down, and that means they had to get rid of a bunch of stuff. That's a big thing to me, is that they decided we're not going to hang on with the guys long in the tooth and try to be the team that sneaks into the wild card and gets hot with our pitching in the playoffs. We know we need to retool things, but it's not easy.
It's not.
It's not a, you know, it's going to take me 3 months to do it. It's going to take Farhan Zaidi and his staff a much longer amount of time. That's why when I look at this season, my greatest hope is Brandon Belt has a great start to the year, and Madison Bumgarner looks like he's the old Madison Bumgarner, because I can get more for Brandon Belt and more for Madison Bumgarner. As hard as that Band-Aid is to rip off, those are the two Band-Aids that need to come off in order for this organization to really head down the road.
Especially if you're not contending by the time the only trade deadline comes up now, as baseball has streamlined its process somewhat. The Giants acquired Eric Kratz from Milwaukee in exchange for minor league infielder C.J. Hinojosa, who was headed the other way. So Kratz, the 38-year-old, will be Buster Posey's primary backup, as you heard Alex Pavlovich say, which tells me Buster Posey's going to spend a lot more time at first base.
Yeah.
Might we see more Brandon Belt in the outfield? And what would that mean defensively? We know that offensively, Belt in the outfield would be the best hitting outfielder they have. But defensively, how much would you be giving up?
Yeah, here's the thing. You got to realize, especially when it comes to Buster Posey, if he's going to be one of your guys that he's going to return back to form of hitting, then you can't have him catching. And they understand that. Right now you're talking about they only had one.
But he wants to catch.
I know, but you
– and he's great with the staff.
He's great with the staff. We understand that. But look at the amount of runs that you're able to generate even in the early season. Three hits, it goes to show you. You're going to need some hitting. And if Buster, where does he behoove? Where does it best fit for him? I think it's going to be more first base, like you said, Dibs.
And it'll be interesting, though, because he provides such added value as a catcher offensively when he's right. Not many of the catchers can receive like he can and also produce – at the levels he does. And also, you put Belt in the outfield, you know you're going to be negative on a run saved defensively with him out there.
Let me ask this one. If we think that Belt and Bumgarner are the two Band-Aids that need to get ripped off for the team to eventually head down the road to completely change it, how long before we're asking that question about Buster Posey if we're thinking about moving him to first base?
Well, it's interesting because the contract is such that it's not that attractive to other teams. Not nearly
would
as attractive as
an American League team like him, because then he can play first, he can catch a little bit, and he can DH?
But a DH who only has an upside of, let's say, 18 home runs, even if he doesn't catch at all, if he just plays first and DHs, can he still be a 20-homer guy? And do you really want your designated hitter to be a guy who he'll hit you 300, don't get me wrong, but 17, 18-homer pop out of that position, I just don't see many teams making that decision. Gentlemen, one down, two to go. This is enjoyable today.
Thank you.
Appreciate
great job.
Your insights.
You were awesome today. All the texters awesome. All the callers did a great job. So we'll see what we can cobble together.
Kai in Montana, sorry we couldn't get to you. Feel free to jump back on tomorrow. You know we're those people. We're friends of the program. We'll hook you up again. Steiny and Guru coming up next. They are guest-free for Lorenzo Neal, Jim Cozumore, Anna Kagadakis. For James and Steven in the back, this is Dan Dibley saying thanks for joining us. Steiny and Guru next here on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.